And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn.
Today we have a special It's Your Turn broadcast. We're going to start off with the Butler County Radio Network's version of A Christmas Carol.
Once upon a time on Christmas Eve, old Ebenezer Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. Scrooge was a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, a hard-hearted miser. On this evening, the office of Scrooge and Marley was shrouded in cold, bleak, biting weather. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No wind that blew was bitterer than he.
Ah, Merry Christmas, humbug. Be gone, you miserable little beggars. Take your infernal Christmas carols and get away from my door.
Sorry, sir. Merry Christmas anyway, sir.
Bah. And you, nephew, what right have you to be merry? You're poor enough. Christmas? Bah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, uncle? What right have you to be dismal about Christmas? You're rich enough. Don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be, Fred, when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled in his own pudding. Ha! Ha! And buried with a stake of holly through his heart. Ha! Keep Christmas in your own way, nephew, and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it, Uncle.
Well, let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good it's ever done you.
Christmas time is a good time, Uncle, and though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good, and I say God bless it.
God bless, Merry Christmas! Hooray!
You there, Bob Cratchit. Get back to work. Let me hear another sound from you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Yes, sir.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us for Christmas dinner tomorrow. Kate would love to see you.
Kate? Oh, yes, your wife. Why did you marry against my will?
Because I fell in love, Uncle Ebenezer.
Because you fell in love with a woman as penniless as yourself, Fred. Oh, good evening.
But you never visited before my marriage. I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you.
Very well. Good evening.
Oh, I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas to you, Uncle.
Good evening.
And a Happy New Year.
Good evening. Mr. Cratchit, see my nephew out.
This way, Mr. Fred, and, a Merry Christmas to you.
And to you and your family, Bob. How is Mrs. Cratchit and your children, and especially your youngest, the little lame boy?
Tim, sir. Tiny Tim. Well, he's getting better. Thank you for asking. Merry Christmas. Oh, to see you, Mr.
Good day, sir. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley, my partner, has been dead these 7 years. In fact, he died 7 years ago this very night. I'm Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, well, at this festive season, Mr. Scrooge, we seek charity for the poor and destitute. You see, many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of the simplest comfort, sir.
A few of us seek to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Ah, you wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. And I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I support the prisons and the workhouses. Let those who are badly off go there.
Oh, but many can't go there.
Yes, many would rather die.
Well, if they would rather die, then they'd better do so and decrease the surplus population.
I see. So the firm of Scrooge and Marley declines.
It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good evening.
Very well, sir. You've made your views quite clear. Good evening to you.
Mr. Scrooge, it's 7 o'clock, sir, and it is Christmas Eve.
So, I suppose you'll want all day tomorrow. And Mr. Cratchit, it's not fair. Why should I pay a day's wages for no work?
'Tis but once a year, sir.
And a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Well, be here all the earlier the next morning, Mr. Cratchit.
I will, sir. Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed. Bah!
Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern and walked home through the rolling fog and bitter cold. He silently passed the urchins crowded round fires in the street, trying to keep warm. The icy Scrooge trudged along through the dark streets, but just as he reached the door of his dismal house, he thought he heard something calling.
Ebenezer! Ebenezer Scrooge!
It was the voice of his long-dead partner, Jacob Marley, whose ghostly face appeared on the door knocker. Scrooge hurried inside, closed the door, and locked himself in. He double-locked himself in. He checked the sitting room, bedroom, lumber room, all as they should be. Secured against surprise, Scrooge put on his dressing gown and nightcap and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. When suddenly...
Someone's in the cellar! But the doors are locked. Double locked. Something is coming. Something is coming closer. It's outside my door. No, I won't believe it. It's humbug. Humbug, I say.
Scrooge! Everybody's a Scrooge!
How now? What do you want with me? Who are you?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. You don't believe in me, Scrooge. Why do you doubt your senses?
Well, the disorder of the stomach makes them cheat. You're not a ghost. Whatever you are, humbug, I tell you.
You are
mercy. I believe you. I believe you. I must. Oh, dreadful apparition. Why do you trouble me? Why do you spirits walk the earth? Why come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men. If that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. Doomed to wander the world and witness what it cannot share but might have shared. Joy!
You are chained, Jacob. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. Link by link, yard by yard. I'm chained by cash boxes, not so bad. Keys, padlocks, ledges. Witness the weight and length of strong chain you bear yourself, Scrooge. It is a ponderous chain.
I see no chain.
You shall, on the day of your death. Mock me. No regret can make amends for one's life opportunity misused.
But you were always a good man of business.
Business? Hey! Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. And it is at the Christmas time that I suffer the most.
I'm sorry for you, Jacob. Is there anything I can do?
For me, it is too late. But I have come to warn you of a hope and chance of escaping my fate. You'll be haunted by three spirits. Expect the feast tomorrow when the bell tolls one. The second the next night at the same hour, the tide upon the next night at the last stroke of 12. Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Yours! Ebenezer, look out these fiend dog. That poor woman and her infant huddled on the doorstep below. Look, that you may see for your own sake.
Ghosts. Hundreds. Chained. Just like yourself. They surround the woman. But they're not haunting her. They're pleading. Doesn't she see them? Why do these ghosts lament, Jacob? Why do they wail?
They seek to aid her. They seek to do good in human matters, but have lost their power forever. They wail in unceasing torture and remorse. Beware this cruel fate, Ebenezer. Beware! Beware! Beware!
Scrooge awoke. He was lying on his bed, still in his robe. Was Marley's visit a dream or not? He decided it was a dream and nothing more. But suddenly, the curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man.
Ebenezer Scrooge,
are you the spirit whose coming was foretold?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
Your past. I come for your welfare. Rise and walk with me.
Out the window? But I am mortal and liable to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand and you shall be upheld in more than this.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road with fields on either hand. It was a clear, cold winter day with snow upon the ground.
Do you recognize this place, Scrooge?
Why, it's my old schoolhouse. But it wasn't a place of learning, more like a prison.
On Christmas Eve, the school is not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still. A lonely boy, reading beside a feeble fire. Do you know him?
I am that child! Alone! Oh,
poor boy.
I wish, but it's too late now.
What is the matter?
Oh, nothing.
There was a boy singing Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all.
Let us see another Christmas. Ebenezer, come. Come to another Christmas past, a celebration.
Fezziwig's warehouse. Oh, I apprenticed here. Why, it's old Fezziwig. Bless his heart. It's Fezziwig, alive again, at one of his Christmas parties.
Yo-ho there, Ebenezer. No work tonight. Christmas Eve. Join in the fun. Merry Christmas, everyone. Come and dance.
Do you recognize yourself, Scrooge? A young man with a twinkle in his eye and a future before him? He looks so happy.
Oh, it was a marvelous party. With cake and punch and cold roast and mince pies and plenty of Guinness. Look at old Fezziwig, how he dances. It's glorious. Ho, ho, what a jolly time we used to have.
It was a small matter for old Fezziwig to make those silly folks so full of joy.
Small matter? Small indeed.
It is so much that he deserves praise.
Bah, it's not that, Spirit. Fezziwig has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service a pleasure or a toil. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
What? Is something bothering you, Scrooge?
No, I should like to say a word or two to my clerk, Bob Cratchit, just now.
Scrooge, my time grows short. Quick, several years later.
Oh, Belle, as beautiful as ever.
A penniless girl who loved you, Scrooge.
And I her. It didn't matter that she had no dowry. We were so happy together.
Until your career with Jacob Marley came between you. As you gained, you so lost. Do you see yourself? You're older now. A man in the prime of life. Your face has begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. Your eyes are greedy. The eager, restless eyes of a miser.
No, spare me this, not this spirit, no!
This music box is a beautiful gift, Ebenezer, but I realize I matter little to you, very little. To protect yourself from a hard and cruel world, you have become hard and cruel in response. I have tried to cheer and comfort you, but another idol has displaced me.
What idol could ever displace you, Belle?
You now worship a golden idol. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off, one by one.
I wanted security, success, for you, Belle.
I seek tenderness, not riches. Therefore, even though it is Christmas, I release you from our engagement with a full heart for the love of him you once were.
No! No, Belle, don't!
Dear Ebenezer, may you be happy in the life you have chosen.
Belle, no! Spirit! Show me no more. Why do you torture me? Remove me. I cannot bear it. Haunt me no longer. No longer. No longer.
The whole scene disappeared, and Scrooge found himself once more alone back upon his bed. He drifted off to sleep, only to be awakened again by the stroke of one. He gradually noticed a great blaze of ruddy light growing from beneath the door. Something was in the outer room.
Come in, Ebenezer Scrooge, come in!
Scrooge opened the door and beheld his own sitting room transformed. The walls and ceiling were so hung with evergreen that it looked like a perfect grove. And there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see. He bore a glowing torch, shaped like Plenty's horn, and held it up, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping around the door.
Come in! Come in and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present. You've never seen the like of me before.
Spirit, take me where you wish. If you have anything to teach me, let me profit by it.
Very well. Touch my robe.
And instantly they were transported to the streets of London on a bright Christmas day. Presently, Scrooge and the spirit came to Camden Town, to a humble house on a humble street.
This is the home of my clerk, Bob Cratchit, his wife and their six children. Why are we here, spirit?
Father's coming. Father! Father!
Ah, Peter, Paul, Mary, Belinda, and Martha.
And how did little Tim behave at church, Bob?
Oh, as good as gold, Mother, and better. Hey, Tim?
They sang ever so nice, Mother. I hope the people saw me in the church. Because I'm a cripple and it might be pleasant for them to remember. On Christmas, who made lame beggars walk and blind men see?
Oh, bless you, my son. See, Mother, his heart is strong and he will get better. I know it.
Oh, smell that goose. Hooray, look. There was never such a goose, never.
All right, be seated. Here you go. Take your turn now. There's plenty of stuffing, dressing, and plum pudding for all of you. Martha, dear, sit next to Tiny Tim and make sure he eats plenty. He must get strong and well if anything should happen to him.
Oh, Mother, don't even think that. I'll see that he eats well. Here, Tim.
Quiet, please! Quiet! Oh, such a feast requires a Merry Christmas to us all. God bless us.
God bless us.
God bless us.
God bless us.
God bless everyone.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, oh no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
Why? If he's to die, he had better do so and decrease the surplus population.
Oh, you use my own words against me.
Here's the punch. Steaming hot. Take your turn. There's enough for a toast and one after that.
A toast. A toast. A toast to Christmas.
Oh, here. I'd like to propose a toast to Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge, the founder of our feast, to Mr. Scrooge.
What? No. Father, please, not him.
The founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had Mr. Scrooge here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, it's Christmas Day.
I'll drink to his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
Come, Ebenezer, there is much more to see. Men who keep Christmas in their hearts, come!
Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. In poorhouse, hospital, and jail, in misery's every refuge, the spirit of Christmas left his blessing and taught Scrooge as he went. Presently, they returned to London. And the ghost of Christmas present dissolved into the mist, and Scrooge stood alone upon the street. As the last stroke of midnight rang, Scrooge remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting his eyes, he beheld the third spirit, a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him.
Are you the ghost of Christmas yet to come? You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not yet happened, but will happen? Spirit? Spirit, will you not speak to me? Ghost of the future, oh, I fear you more than any specter I've seen. Lead on. The night is waning fast, and time is precious to me. Spirit, why have you brought me here again to Bob Cratchit's home? But it is... it is different. It is so quiet. What is it, Spirit? What kind of Christmas is this?
Sorry I'm late, Mother. I was at the churchyard. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him. I promised Tiny Tim that we'd walk there. Oh, on Sundays.
Oh, Bob.
My little child, my tiny...
Oh, that's cruel. Cruel. Spirit, can't you give me some ray of hope that I may change all this, that Tiny Tim may live? Spirit, where are we now? Merciful heaven! The churchyard! Desolate, lonely, crumbling graves. Is poor Tiny Tim buried here? Tell me, Spirit, are these the shadows of things that will be? Or are they the shadows of things that might be? Oh, Spirit, that gravestone to which you point, what is on it? Wait! The name on the grave is Ebenezer Scrooge!
Ebenezer Scrooge! No! No! No, Spirit! Why show me this if I am past all hope? Am I to become like Jacob Marley? Like the other wretched ghosts chained, wandering the earth forever? No! No! Spirit! Spirit, hear me! I'm not the man I was! Tell me that I may change these dreadful shadows to... I'll honor Christmas in my heart. I'll try and keep it all the year. I'll live in the past, the present, the future, and not shut out the lessons they teach. I pray, please, Spirit, that I may sponge away the writing on this stone. I beg you, I'll change. I'll change. I pray. I beg you. I'll change. I'll change, please. Please, I'll change.
Why? What's this? My bedpost. I'm home. I'm home in my home bed. I'm in my own room. Oh, Jacob Marley. Oh, heaven and the Christmas spirits be praised. I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Oh, glorious light, fresh air. Oh, the window. Oh, hi. Merry. Merry. Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
And a Happy New Year, sir.
Why? Boy, what's today? What is it? What day is it, my fine fella?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day, sir.
Christmas Day? Why, I haven't missed it. Why, the spirits have done it all in one night.
And so they had done it all in one night. Scrooge sent the boy to the poultry shop to buy their prize turkey and have it delivered to the Cratchit family as an anonymous gift. Then the new Ebenezer Scrooge dressed himself all in his best and got out into the streets of London. By this time, people were pouring forth, and Scrooge regarded all with a delighted smile and a hearty holiday greeting.
Oh, Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
By chance, Ebenezer came upon the charity seekers he had dismissed yesterday, but today he apologized and made a large donation to their worthy cause, with many back payments included. He continued on to the home of his nephew Fred, who was in the midst of his Christmas dinner with his wife and friends. And so Ebenezer Scrooge rejoined his family and rejoined the family of man. The next morning, he arrived early at his counting house to catch Bob Cratchit coming in late. But Bob was ever late. The clock had struck 9. No Bob. Quarter past. No Bob. Finally,
Mr. Cratchit? What do you mean by coming in at this time?
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
Bob Cratchit, I'll not stand this sort of thing any longer. Therefore, I am about to raise your salary.
Oh, please, sir. Yes, oh, please. Oh, you got to raise my salary? But, sir!
Wait. No, Bob. I've not lost my senses. I've come to them. A Merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas than I have given you for many a year. Sit down. We'll discuss your affairs over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Bob Cratchit, Merry Christmas!
Scrooge was better than his word. He became as good a friend, as good a master, as good a man as the good old city ever knew. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he became a second father. And it was always said that Ebenezer Scrooge knew how to keep Christmas well. May that be truly said of us, all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, all through the Holiday Playhouse, not a creature is stirring that doesn't wish our radio audience a merry, merry Christmas. If our little production has provided you with good cheer, then you have only to thank Charles Dickens, the true founder of our feast in this fairy tale of all ages, especially our own. Today's program was adapted and scored by Tony Palermo. This has been a very merry production of the Butler County Radio Network.
On average, humans walk 100,000 miles during the course of their lives. So it makes sense our feet and ankles may suffer wear and tear. Doctors William Saar and Christopher Edwards of the foot and ankle team at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat numerous injuries and conditions to help get you back on your feet. Their approach to orthopedic foot and ankle care offers a wide range of conservative to surgical treatment options. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
A quick word from your friends at Butler Motor Tours, a local company on South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com. Your headquarters for deluxe motor coach tours, outstanding show and theater packages, hundreds and hundreds of fun destinations. And with the holiday season upon us, here's a gift-giving idea. How about a gift certificate for Butler Motor Tours? You don't have to select the destination for the person that you're gifting. No, just give them a gift certificate and they can put it toward the vacation of their choosing. Get the details at Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. By the way, they're also taking a one-day trip down to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again on January 7th. Get the details on that at their website, butlerbus.com. For holiday gift giving, yes. Butler Motor Tours, 282-1000 or online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. Welcome, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, and we're very pleased, very happy to be able to talk once again with Ralph Peters, who is, by most accounts, the most critically acclaimed writer of Civil War historical fiction today. He is also a Fox News analyst and a retired Army officer, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Nice to talk with you again, sir. Nice to have you with us.
Well, great to talk to you. And as a Pennsylvania boy, it's always good to talk to the home folks.
Some of our listeners will remember that we've chatted with you in the past, in fact, twice in the past. This may be the last time for a while. I understand that you've just published the last book in your series of historical fiction novels about the Civil War. Is this the last one?
Yes and no. It ends the five-book cycle of the Army of the Potomac, Army of Northern Virginia, from Gettysburg to Appomattox. And by the way, all the books are self-contained. You don't have to read them in order. Mm-hmm. But my publisher encouraged me, and I really secretly wanted to write about Stonewall Jackson and the Battle of Chancellorsville. So I am working on a prequel, if you will. And after that, you know, this has taken a decade of my life. I've been studying the Civil War all my life, but the last decade's been just exhausting, trying to deliver the best work I could. And after this one, I'm going to need a break.
Well, we haven't talked with you about all of the books in this cycle, although we have chatted about two of them, Cain at Gettysburg, which I think was the first one in the cycle. And we also chatted with you about Valley of the Shadow. But the last in this five-book cycle is The Last Battle of the Civil War. The title is Judgment at Appomattox. I think if you
talked with most Americans, you know, say, what's Appomattox? Most people, I think, would know, okay, that was the last battle in the Civil War. Most of us probably couldn't go a heck of a lot further than that, Colonel Peters. I don't think so.
Yeah, well, I think, people that are, well-educated know that that's where Lee surrendered to Grant, but you're right. That's it. And one of the key reasons I've written these books is because there's so much we don't know. We know a couple names of, Gettysburg, maybe Appomattox or Chancellorsville, Shiloh, a couple big battles, a couple names of generals. But this was an incredibly complex war, spans over 4 years, and 740,000 Americans, North and South, died.
Mm.
And so I'm trying to bring home the human reality. And you're right, Appomattox, people don't understand it. It wasn't just one last skirmish and they surrender. The book, Judgment of Appomattox, the new one, spans the last 2 weeks of the war, where over the winter, Grant has pinned Lee in the siege lines at Petersburg and around Richmond. And it's all just coming apart. Lee knows it's over, but he makes a last desperate struggle, tries to whip Grant one last time, doesn't work out. He has to escape from Petersburg in the dead of the night with what's left of his army. And then there's a chase across southern Virginia. It's really one of the most dramatic incidents in American history. With Lee's army, they can't, they're moving so fast, there's no food, they can't catch up with them. They're hungry, regiments don't eat for 3 days, even 4 days. But they keep marching, not out of loyalty to the Confederacy at this point, but out of loyalty to Lee. Meanwhile, Grant and his subordinates, Meade, Phil Sheridan, they're trying as hard as they can to catch Lee and cut him off before he can join the other last Eastern Confederate Army in North Carolina. And every day, there are major battles or punishing series of skirmishes. Battles people don't think about anymore. The breaking the siege lines, a breakthrough of Petersburg, Five Forks, Sailor's Creek, High Bridge, and they're full of drama in and of themselves. But when you look at the fascinating people on both sides who fought them, they're just wonderful stories that we don't know, mm-hmm. except for the hardcore Civil War buffs. And so I really want people to know our history. And unfortunately, it seems more timely than ever because the way we misinterpret the Civil War today on both sides is just sad.
Let's talk a little bit about I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about Appomattox, but what's the methodology that you use? Because you have chosen to use historical fiction. It dramatizes these battles that you've described. But do you select a character or two and then follow them through this attempt by Lee to get away? Is that how you do it, sir?
Well, I think the characters select me in the sense that I read widely. Read, their letters, their diaries, their memoirs, although the letters and diaries written on the spot tend to be more honest than the memoirs. I read it and reread it, and I'll read about a much wider range of figures than the ones that actually make it into the book. And as I'm reading, I'm just sensing whose story deserves to be told, whose story will carry the plot lines the best. And again, I have to stress that although these books are classified as novels, I think of them as dramatized history because they're extremely accurate historically. The only thing that makes them novels is that I'm exploring the inner lives, the rationales, the reasoning, the passions of these men, and also some of the dialogue. Some of the dialogue actually has been recorded, but a lot of it, the dialogue is what I imagine they would have been saying. Other than that, everything is true. The characters, right down to this Irish private from the Louisiana Tigers, who has a hard life, he's a real person, Daniel Rorden. And so I stick close to the historical record. But ultimately, there are just some characters, as you do the research, and I've been researching the Civil War, it's been an avocation literally since childhood, they're just some that just rise from the grave and want justice. They want their stories to be told. And when I'm writing well, I really feel like I'm channeling them, like they're speaking through me. And that's only a slight exaggeration. I mean, when you're writing well, it's almost trance-like. And these people, sometimes, I go back and, obviously I rewrite. But sometimes I'll write a scene or a section that, when I look back at it, when I'm correcting proof, page proofs a year later, I'll look at it and say, my God, where did that come from? How did I do that? And it's their ghosts. The ghosts speak.
A few bits of information I helped to review myself. Richmond was the capital of the Confederacy, Richmond, Virginia. And when you look at a map, my goodness, that's very, very close to Washington, D.C. That is very strange, isn't it?
It is indeed. And the majority of the key battles of the Civil War in the East are fought in that 100-mile space between Virginia and Washington, D.C.
Hmm.
And, you know, Virginia is ravaged, especially along the Rappahannock and Rapidan Rivers. Rappahannock's about halfway between Washington and Richmond. So you have, obviously, battles like Chancellorsville, Fredericksburg, all the overland campaign battles, Spotsylvania, North Anna, Cold Harbor, Cedar Mountain earlier in the war. Both battles of Bull Run are fought in Northern Virginia. And it really is a cockpit of war for 4 years. And it's a war that spans the continent. There's fighting at Glorieta Pass in New Mexico. The rivers are the superhighways of the day. And Grant is the man who sees that. And Grant, he's really fighting early on for control of rivers. And he knows how to use rivers. But at the end of the day, your observation is absolutely right. There's this 100-mile space between Richmond and Washington where the war really is ultimately decided.
Now,
and
it's
bloodstained ground.
Did Robert E. Lee, because we'd already had Vicksburg, we'd already had Sherman going through Georgia. When Richmond fell, when the capital of the Confederacy fell, did Robert E. Lee know that it was over or soon to be over? I mean, in his heart?
I think Robert E. Lee knew the war was lost by the late summer, early autumn of 1864. But his pride, he spent his whole life building... You know, Robert E. Lee is fascinating. We don't understand him. He comes from the aristocratic Lee family of Virginia, yes. But he's from the black sheep side. His father, the Revolutionary War hero, Light Horse Harry Lee, after he gets into all sorts of financial trouble, scandals, scams, has to flee the country. He leaves his wife and children in not-so-genteel poverty in Virginia. And Lee, in the summertime, gets to visit his rich cousins on the plantations. But he's always the one that's, at the bottom of the table, not fully welcome, not fully part of the Klan. He goes to West Point because it's a free education. And the Army suits him. And we see pictures of Robert E. Lee when he's old and tired at the end of the war. He was a big, dashingly handsome young man, a brilliant officer. He loved parties and dancing and flirting. And it's just, he's much more alive than the image we have of him is just a statue. But in the war, everything he's built up is rebuilding his branch of the family, his image as the noble warrior. It all threatened to collapse. And he's also stubborn. And he doesn't remember Grant from the Mexican War. Grant was there, but Grant was a nondescript-looking lieutenant, quartermaster. Lee just doesn't remember him. And on some level, it's frustrating to him that this guy he doesn't even remember is whipping him, because Lee had been the darling of the pre-war U.S. Army.
Hmm.
And when you finally get to the final 2 weeks of the war, Judgment of Appomattox, the part that this new book covers, the final 2 weeks, you got to remember, Lee doesn't know if he and his sons and his nephew, all of whom are Confederate generals, he doesn't know if they'll be tried for treason and hanged.
No.
Not the way he expected to end up. And so in one of the great acts of magnanimity in our history, Grant at Appomattox surprises Lee with extremely generous surrender terms that there'll be no retribution. Officers and soldiers of the Confederate Army, they're paroled. If they go peaceably to their homes, the federal government will not molest them. They can keep their horses for spring plowing. Officers can keep their sidearms, point of pride. And they're hungry, and Grant feeds them. It's very, very important. And even after the war, God, the tragedy is that Lincoln is shot. It's the worst thing that happened to the South, except for the war itself. But after the war, President Johnson decides, about a year later, that he wants to arrest Robert E. Lee and try him for treason. And Ulysses S. Grant, who's the most popular man in the country at that point, throws one of his rare tantrums, and he tells President Johnson, if you do that, I will resign my commission, and I will fight you on this.
Wow.
And Johnson backs down.
Wow, something
and
like...
Lee is allowed to live out his few remaining years in peace as president of Washington College, now Washington Lee University. And, you know, it was important. And Lincoln and Grant, this perhaps the greatest two-man team in American history, they understand each other almost telepathically, and they know that after the war, this hard-fought war ends, it's not going to be about retribution. It has to be about reconciliation. Mm. And Grant does his best. The tragedy is Lincoln's killed, and the venomous, hardcore Punish the South crowd gets the upper hand.
Listeners, our time begins to run short. I have to sneak in a quick break here. We do have a couple more minutes that we're able to chat with Ralph Peters. This is such fascinating stuff. And I know we have a ton of Civil War buffs around here that are going to eat up this fifth and final book in his series, Judgment at Appomattox. Back with a couple more minutes with Ralph Peters right after these words.
The holiday season is filled with many traditions. A favorite tradition in Butler is going to Cummings Candy and Coffee. Catch up with friends over an espresso drink, stop in for chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials for gift-giving, or pick up a pound of Butler's own propriety blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast, for your family gatherings. For traditions old and new, go to Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in three locations.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back on the It's Your Turn program here today. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Ralph Peters, a very popular author, Civil War historian, writer of historical fiction, dramatized history, as Ralph Peters described it in the first part of our conversation. He's a retired Army officer as well, Lieutenant Colonel. You mentioned the death of Lincoln. Some people might not realize just how quickly that came after the surrender at Appomattox. Appomattox surrender was early April of 1865, and Lincoln was assassinated very shortly thereafter, wasn't he?
Right, and the Civil War is not the Civil War is not yet technically over. There are still Confederates holding out in Texas. There's still some questions about the negotiations with Joe Johnson's army in North Carolina. And it's just, although that's resolved, but there are still Confederates scattered around that haven't surrendered yet, and they're going to, they're going to have to. But Lincoln's assassination was just a tragedy for this country, and especially for the South, because he really had, he believed in, as his quote goes, the better angels of our nature, and he didn't want to punish the South. He wanted to help, give it a helping hand, to lift it back up. And of course, after his assassination, people like, you know, our fellow Pennsylvanian Thaddeus Stevens, but Sumner, Stanton, they just get the upper hand, and some of our policies toward the South were well-intentioned, others were absolutely foolish, and it just, what a great tragedy for this country that Abraham Lincoln was shot. He was a genuinely good man.
Appomattox, by the way, geographically, it's kind of towards southern Virginia, isn't it? I mean, Lee was racing to get away from Richmond.
Yeah, it's south central Virginia. There, Lee is running, trying to reunite his army with Joseph Johnson's last army in North Carolina, hoping that together they'll maybe be able to make a better stand. And Grant keeps nudging him away from North Carolina. And nobody plans to get to Appomattox. That's just where they end up. And it's south of the James River, the Appomattox, the headwaters of the Appomattox. And that's just, they end up at this dusty country courthouse, and Wilbur McLean's house where the surrender is held in the parlor.
That's another thing I learned from your book. I don't know, in my mind's eye I had, because Appomattox is such a significant benchmark in our history, I didn't realize that it was a dusty old country courthouse practically out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely. With a rail line running a couple miles away. And again, it's just where the armies ended up. And gosh, but getting there, the story of the book, Judgment at Appomattox, it's about all these incredibly brutal and tough fights. Fort Stedman, where Lee May tries to break through, can't. Tries to hit Grant one last time, can't really do it. Then you have, you know, Five Forks, the collapse of the siege lines at Petersburg, desperate defense. The armies are on the run, fighting, skirmishing, battles every single day. The Black Day of the Confederacy, where almost a dozen Confederate generals are captured at Sailor's Creek. And then finally, you know, High Bridge. All these fights we don't know about. We, you know, only the specialists know about today. And finally, they end up at Appomattox. And that last morning, Lee makes one last attempt to break out. John Brown Gordon leads the final attack, and it fails. The Union Army, in overwhelming strength, has surrounded them, and Lee knows that no matter what will come, he now has to surrender. He can't kill any more of these men who followed him so far.
Judgment at Appomattox. It's the latest, listeners, in the line of actually five now historical fiction novels, dramatized history by Ralph Peters. One quick question here. Was Robert E. Lee, his family from the Washington, D.C. area, didn't his family have property where now Arlington Cemetery is located?
Yep, that is absolutely right. Arlington National Cemetery exists because Lee's wife inherited Arlington House when her father died. And that was their plantation. It wasn't a major cotton plantation or anything like that. It was a country home, basically, and beautiful, overlooking the Potomac and Washington. And General Montgomery Meigs, the Union quartermaster general in the war, he was one of those people, he just couldn't forgive Lee for going with his state as opposed to the Union. And so Montgomery Meigs starts burying the war dead right around the house, all around the house, so that it's never going to be able to be habitable again. It's never going to be Lee's home again. But yes, Lee's family was primarily from northern and central Virginia. Lee's born at Stratford Hall Plantation down the Potomac. And their ties, I mean, again, at that time, American identities were different. In the north, there's a pretty strong sense of national identity already. But the south is still feudal, and people really identify with their states. You ask somebody down south who they were in 1861, and they'll say, I'm a Mississippian, I'm a Virginian, I'm an Alabamian. They're most Sam American. So, again, I tell people, before you rush to judgment on any side, before you go into screaming matches about tearing down statues, learn the facts. Study the men and women and what they actually believed and what they actually stood for. It wasn't all, no pun intended, black and white.
You can learn a lot more about this by reading Ralph Peters' latest book. Listeners, the title is Judgment at Appomattox. It's just published. One final quick thought. I can't have a retired Army officer on with me and not ask. Do you get concerned, sir, about the news you hear out of Korea these days?
Extremely concerned. We've let this problem go for a full generation. It's spinning out of control. And God knows, I hope there's someone who will miraculously find a peaceful solution. But increasingly, it looks like we may have to take military measures, because the bottom line is this: we cannot allow Americans to die because we couldn't make up our minds. So if it comes down, you know, to dead North Koreans or dead Americans, I choose dead North Koreans.
Ralph Peters, our guest. Thank you, sir. Good to talk with you again. Thanks much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Sure. So long now.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327. Welcome, listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late on It's Your Turn today, Dave Malarkey is my name, and on this segment we're pleased to be able to talk for a few minutes with Dr. Mike Moreno about a new book that he's just published very, very recently entitled The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging. First of all, Dr. Moreno, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Some folks might be familiar with an earlier work of yours entitled The 17-Day Diet. And from what I understand, it was your work on that previous book that and the feedback from that that kind of led you to the 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging. Is that right?
You know, it's absolutely right. The first book was really focused on just some general principles at getting people down to a healthier weight and getting them heading in the right direction in terms of their weight. And this one sort of is an attempt to now address the organ systems, all of the organ systems, and how they all sort of function between each other, and they're all connected. But the first book was really sort of the jump start to our health, and hoping to enhance people's lifestyle and health even further.
A little bit about our guest, listeners, Dr. Michael Moreno, MD, is a graduate of the University of California at Irvine, and also the Hahnemann Medical School, now Drexel University. Following his residency at Kaiser Permanente in Fontana, California, he moved to San Diego, where he now practices family medicine. He also sits on the board of the San Diego chapter of the American Academy of Family Physicians. You, in your book, Dr. Moreno, The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging, you identify five specific factors that help determine aging. Can you mention those, and perhaps we can talk about each one briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, aging is such a broad term, there are several things I think that contribute to aging, but I think the main five are the five that I outline in the book. The first one is inflammation, and a lot of people think of inflammation. I think the best, most common way to think of it is arthritic-type conditions, inflammation of the joints. And it's inflammation that can actually carry throughout the body. I think we classically think of it as just sort of our joints get inflamed when we get arthritis, but, you know, inflammation can carry through to the brain and to the digestive system and to the heart and lungs, and so it's a very broad thing that can occur really everywhere. The second is something called oxidative stress, and I don't want to get too medical here and lose people because they get bored, but oxidative stress most commonly is known to people when you hear the term antioxidants. Mm-hmm. You hear a lot of people will say, you know, eat foods rich in antioxidants, and what that essentially means is you're combating this oxidative stress that occurs in the body. And the easiest way to think of oxidative stress, very simply, if you take a piece of metal that rusts over time, there's a molecular chemical process that causes that rusting, and that rusting is actually oxidation. And it turns out that those same chemicals and molecules and these atoms can actually circulate and do actually circulate in our bodies. And the same process that causes rust on a piece of metal can cause a rusting type effect on our organs. And this entire process can be combated by antioxidants. And so that's where you hear a lot about that in terms of people that talk of antioxidants.
Your other, your next factor, and I'm guessing only from the word glycation, it probably has to do with the sugar and diabetes.
You know, absolutely. So when you look at glycation, glycation is specific to the combinations, you hit it right on the head, of sugars, carbohydrates, and the combination of proteins in our diet. So when we talk about glycation, there are products called advanced glycation end products, or AGEs. And what these are is a sort of a product of poor nutrition as it pertains exactly to sugars. And when we want to ingest carbohydrates, and we really do, I think there's been such a tremendous movement in so many diets that say no carbs, zero carbs, and quite honestly, we can't survive like that. We do need carbs. It's an energy source. We just need the right carbs, so focusing on whole wheats, whole grains, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, and whole wheat breads. And also the portion size, but yeah, glycation has to do with sort of the effects of combinations of protein and the proper, or I should say, you know, the improper carbs that can cause problems to, again, all of the organs. And that's one thing to stress before we go on to the fourth one, is that each of these processes is not specific to only one organ system. And each of these processes, because it's so broad in the body, can occur in any and every organ system. Mm. And then the fourth one has to do with our very, very precious DNA. And we all know that the DNA is sort of our template or our blueprint for every cell in our body. And it's this DNA that is critical to the function of each of these organs. So if it's not working efficiently, if it's not functioning properly or doing the job it's supposed to do, you can imagine it can affect every cell in the body. And so this process of what we call methylation has to do with the DNA and the effects on the DNA through foods. One of the big talks in terms of methylation and its effect on DNA has to do with the vitamin B complex, B6, B12, folic acid. So methylation or methylating properly ensures properly functioning DNA that can do its job well. And then lastly is one thing that everybody's always trying to battle, which is immune and our immunity. And the whole idea of immune impairment is another thing that affects us and ages us. And again, as you can imagine, the immune impairment is an effective process in every part of your body. So, you know, those are the main things. And those five things, again, are broad throughout the body. And they're really, when you break them down, they're a combination of some very basic things that we need to try to follow. Stay hydrated, stay active and moving, some proper diets so that you can maintain, or diet, I should say, dietary habits so that you can maintain a good weight range, and a few very, very basic supplements. And if you do those things, you can really, really enrich the production and the function of all of your organs. And I'll tell you, we all want to get older, because getting older means you're staying alive another day. I mean, when I think of the processes of aging and getting older, I think they're two different things. I think getting older is a product of living another day or living a long life. Mm-hmm. But we want to age gracefully. So aging does not necessarily have to follow along with getting older. I think we can age in a much more healthy way through some basic things.
We're talking, listeners, for those of you who may have joined us a few minutes late, on this segment of It's Your Turn. Welcome. Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guest visits with us by telephone today, Dr. Mike Moreno, and we're talking about his new book. It's called The 17 day plan, the 17-day plan to stop aging. And as Dr. Moreno just said, from the day we're born, doctor, every year, every month, every second, there's no denying it, we're all getting older.
We are, and that's okay. It's just how we get older and the way we get older. And, you see people who are in their 80s and 90s and who are flourishing, and they're in better health than people half their age. So the key's out there, and the secret is out there, and I don't think it's lotions and potions, and I don't think it's a fountain of youth, and I don't think it's a magic wand. I think it's just some basic sort of health 101 tips that we may have forgotten in the last several years.
Well, a lot of folks, whether it's because they've seen it in family members, or we have a lot of baby boomers now, the biggest percentage of our population in our society, maybe they're starting to feel it themselves. They just think that getting older means it's inevitable. Painful joints, droopy skin, wrinkles, thinning hair, overall declining health. And that's your main point in this book. Yes, obviously you're going to get older.
Certainly.
We're not going to stop that, but aging is not the same, and we can do things to affect the process of aging.
We certainly can. It's I think we feel as though we don't have as much control over the aging process as we actually do. Certainly genetics and so many other things. I know a lot of listeners are out there thinking, well, it's in my genes. But, I think you have to acknowledge that and to some point accept it. But I think we need to focus on what we can do to change it. And, there are variables. I've always looked at general health in my patients and in really any individual as an equation of constants and variables. These constants are oftentimes our genetics, our genetic makeup, or genetic predispositions. They're things that we can't change. But the variables are the things that we do have control over. And if we focus our efforts and energy on these variables, I think it will make a tremendous difference in our overall health picture.
Let us take a quick break here, and as we go to break, we'll remind listeners, get a pencil ready, because we'll give you a web address a little bit later on before we wrap up with Dr. Mike, where you can get more information on, number one, his book, and also on diet. We'll take a quick break. Be back to wrap up our conversation with Dr. Mike Moreno here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after this.
You're a dog owner, a dog parent. What does your dog mean to you? Company? Fun? Affection? Sure. But let's add comfort. Your dog offers a level of comfort at just the right time when you need some of that. Comfort. And that's what O'Shea offers at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler. Comfort. So many people have told us that with O'Shea present at a funeral, she offers a level of comfort that's indescribable. Comfort for the family and comfort for everyone attending. So O'Shea is available for a funeral service, but only if requested by the family. O'Shea creates a feeling of calm, comfort. So come in and meet O'Shea and see why so many folks want her here at a funeral. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, and our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home, the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back, listeners. Dave Malarkey is my name. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Our guest chats with us by telephone today. He is Dr. Mike Moreno, talking with us from out in California where his practice is in the San Diego area. We're talking specifically today about his recently published book, The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging. We talked about the five factors in the first portion of our conversation. Doctor, I'd like to focus a little bit on what you've developed as a four-cycle plan that you, of course, outlined in much more detail in your book. We're just scratching the surface of it here, but maybe we could talk about those four cycles. It's really the key. It's really the heart of your plan, isn't it?
It really is. You know, each of the cycles, as you said, there pointed out, there are four cycles, and each of these cycles has a grouping of organ systems. And the first cycle is called restore. And I call it restore because I think it really focuses on restoring what I feel are the principal organ systems. And those principal three are the brain, the heart, and lungs. And in order for someone to exist and function properly, I mean, without one of those, you're in trouble. So, you know, I think most people would agree with that. So that's really the foundation, sort of the building block and the foundational frame of what is to come. So cycle one gives you a 17-day plan to sort of re-enrich and nurture and repair, or I should say restore, those three organ systems. When you move to cycle two, and cycle two is actually called restore, I bring in four additional systems in the body, and those being the digestive system, the musculoskeletal system, so our bones and muscles and joints, the hormonal system, or in medicine we call it the endocrine system, which is an elaborate system of hormones that are produced through different organs in the body, and then lastly, the immune system. So you hear people all the time saying, you know, gosh, how can I make my immunity better? How can I improve my immunity? So these four systems are, again, restored, and they're restored on that foundation that you've built from cycle one involving the heart, lungs, and brain. When we move to cycle three, refine now gets into another level of systems, and we focus on male sexual health, female sexual health and reproduction. We focus a lot on the bladder and the urinary system. So many people, as we get older, well, for men, you know, we were blessed with the prostate, so we are lucky, or I should say unlucky enough to have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get older, we also have bladder issues, and you hear about incontinence and stress incontinence or urge incontinence. So the fourth cycle talks about a lot of these things for men and women both in terms of the urological system and then again sexual health. And then lastly is a cycle called renew. And again, each one of these cycles is 17 days. So the renew cycle focuses on the environment and cultural issues. It focuses on, now that we've established this body that's, you know, primed and well-oiled and well-tuned, now how do we make it survive and how can we make it flourish and perhaps even improve in the environment? And from environment, I mean our local environment in our homes, how we live in terms of the pollutants or the air quality in our homes, how we store our foods, how we cook our foods. And as you translate that even further to the outside environment and to the air pollution, into cultural things, you know, a positive attitude, doing good deeds for people, you know, paying it forward, as they say, just a lot of sort of environmental things that can really, really enhance your health and longevity, partnership and so many different things. So it really tries to build on a foundational unit, build a well-oiled machine, send it out into the world, and not only enhance it, but perhaps enhance the lives of others.
You mentioned when you were discussing, I think it was cycle three, the reproductive and urinary system. You mentioned prostate, obviously, that's a man's concern. There's also menopause, which is a female concern, and you deal with that in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a chapter in the first book 2 years ago that was specifically for PMS and premenstrual syndrome, which, you know, women Well, women and men, we both deal with it, but certainly women a lot more in terms of how it can affect your diet and your eating habits. But, yeah, we wanted to sort of bring the change of life into this book as well. And there are a lot of natural ways to approach it. And for women, you know, a lot of women really, really are affected by the whole change of life and menopause. So there are ways to sort of get around it. And again, these are all natural ways. My goal is to try to enhance our lives through simple, basic things, food, diet, activity, and very basic supplements. And I tried not to leave anyone or anything out. And I hope this book serves for a building block to a healthy, you know, long life.
I think it's important what you just mentioned, Dr. Moreno, about you tried to concentrate on simple things. This is not a book that's going to go way over most people's head. Let me give you an example here, a couple of examples, folks, from the book, The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging. To help your brain, brush your teeth and floss regularly. I never realized that could be a difficulty that would affect your brain. Gum disease, people with gum disease have worse memories. Wow. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and when you look at this has been sort of looked at for quite a long time, going back 10, 15 years ago. In fact, I can remember a very good friend of mine who is a dentist, and he had started, you know, talking to me about how important dental hygiene was for heart disease. And a lot of people may remember that throughout their history, medical history, when they go to the dentist, they'll oftentimes, if they have a history of heart disease or a heart valve, that they'll have to take antibiotics prior to having dental work done.
Yes, yes.
And it falls right along those lines. And so when you talk about dental hygiene, and again, you mentioned it, brushing and flossing, these are the things that are really important, because this gum disease can actually affect, because of bacteria and circulation, can actually affect memory. Because, as again, you're talking bacteria and circulatory effects that go everywhere. And the heart is one place, but the brain is the other. And so they looked at some specific studies, and it clearly showed that the memory in these people, and this was a pretty well-done test, that it showed that the memory in many of these people in this large study were considerably better in the people who had better dental hygiene. So it's real stuff, but it's simple stuff, as you said. It's bread and butter kind of things that can make a difference.
Reproductive health, dehydration can negatively impact sperm production. So guys, keep hydrated. Here's urinary health, something else I'd never heard before. Cranberry juice can prevent urinary infections by cleansing bad bacteria. These are simple things that anybody can do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the cranberry idea, and nowadays you go to the grocery store and you'll see cranberry pills, and it drives me nuts, because I think to myself, there are other ways of doing things besides pills. But yeah, you know, cranberry has a unique chemical property of it that it does not or disallows bacteria from attaching to the bladder wall. And so really the main things I tell people for prevention of bladder infections are to drink a lot of water, stay well hydrated, you know, minimize your caffeine, pee when you got to pee. It's a simple basic thing, but you know, so many of us, you know, we're at work and we're busy and we're doing three or four things, and then we run to the bathroom holding our legs crossed. Don't do that. Yes, it really can put stress and strain on the bladder and allow those bacteria to sort of hang out longer than you want. But yeah, cranberry is another simple thing. But again, why take a pill when you can do some of these things in a more natural way?
One more thing I want to talk about. Our time's running out here with Dr. Mike Moreno. But again, I like the simplicity. I sometimes get mixed up. We're talking about the immune system now, helping the immune system. I sometimes get mixed up when I'm at the supermarket or planning a dinner. You know, you talked earlier about glucose and sugars. Now carbs, if I remember correctly from my health class, I mean, they turn into sugars, right, after you eat them. So
that's exactly right. When you take a loaf of bread or tortillas or potatoes or rice, you know, oftentimes people think of these as sort of a safe food. And it's not to say you can't have these, but again, it's portion control, and it's perhaps picking the right ones, you know, rather than white rice, whole grain or brown rice, and again, whole wheat bread rather than white. There's a number of different pastas that you can get now that aren't necessarily of the flour type. But absolutely, as carbohydrates are broken down, they essentially become sugar. And you'll see the diabetics that struggle with this constantly. Fruit's another example. Fruit's extremely helpful for your diet in terms of fiber and vitamins and minerals. But too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And I think about that in terms of people who are trying to lose weight, or particularly in diabetics who are working to lower their sugars.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you said was white foods, and that is so easy for me to remember. White foods, that's, you know, white bread, white pasta, rice, sugar, all of that crowds your body with excessive glucose. Well, those are the kind of things you'll find in a book that's crammed full of interesting stuff, folks. The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging by Dr. Mike Moreno. You have a website where people can get more info, right, Dr. Mike?
Absolutely. Two, basically. The first one is called the 17daydiet.com. That's the number 17. Number of things on there, people sharing their ideas, concepts, recipes, success stories. And then the other website, which is my name, drmikediet.com. So it's drmikediet.com. But both of those connect to each other, and I think you'll find all kinds of good information on there.
Dr. Mike Moreno, author of The 17-Day Plan to Stop Aging. Thanks, Dr. Mike. It was good to talk to you. Nice to chat with you today.
You know, thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so long now.
Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 0303. The pick three is 304. The pick four, 6888. The pick 5 is 11981. The wild ball for each of those is 6. The treasure hunt 1, 2, 11, 21, and 23. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's jackpot is $50,000.
Hey folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Going Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey mini storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, they've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and would like to take this opportunity to wish everyone a joyous Christmas and a healthy, happy, and prosperous new year.
Hunter Truck Sales, providing solutions for all your trucking needs. Check out huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations.
When you work with an independent insurance agent, you put the power of choice to work for you. Independent agents know several companies and their coverages, which means more options. And because companies like Donegal Insurance Group use the independent agent system, you not only get quality insurance, you also save money. The Independent Insurance Agent System. Discover the power of choice.
The C.W. Howard Insurance Agency Incorporated. Quite possibly your best friend on your worst day. With offices in Butler and Seven Fields.
Considering the purchase of pre-need funeral merchandise? Don't buy or sign anything until you and your family have all the facts. Consult the Thomas M. Steitner Funeral Home in Chicora before you purchase anything. The Steichners have been in this business since 1972 and are experts in pre-arrangement, right down to the last detail. Details that you may not be aware of. The Thomas M. Steichner Funeral Home in Socorro walks you through the entire process, explaining everything, and most often will save you money. 100% of all pre-need purchase money is placed in a trust fund in the name of the person buying the merchandise and service. So before you decide on anything, be sure to call 445-2200. That's 445-2200 and talk with Tom Steichner or Tammy Steichner, second generation of the Steichner family. Pre-arrangement by the Thomas M. Steichner Funeral Home in Socorro. Go ahead. Give them a call. Do it today while you're thinking about it.